Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Darren, are we going to see a babyface Damian Priest again soon based on tonight's portrayal of Priest? One, I thought he came across largely like a babyface against Seth in the opening segments to hype their match, and then was upset with Finn Balor for trying to interfere, largely fought fair against Seth. And it also would explain why Priest got this rapid title shot because they wanted to squeeze it in before they moved to something else. What do you think of what we saw with Priest tonight?
Yeah, there was certainly a more than subtle hint that he could be turning, and I'm not opposed to that. I thought that he really stepped it up in the ring tonight and didn't cheat for the most part and was mad that Balor was out there. So I could see them going in that direction. They kind of teased something with Finn and JD. I forget his last name from NXT, the call-up. So maybe they're headed in that direction of them teaming up, perhaps. And it could be time for that because Priest, I think he's at the level where they kind of saw him as a superstar. He's not out of place main eventing. I mean, you're going to look good going against Seth, but he made a good accounting of himself there. So I could see him taking off as a solo act if they choose to go that way.
Yeah. And I think you're right. I think we had that little hint of JD McDonagh and Finn Balor together and Balor facing off against Seth and playing up their history with the Universal title and a barricade bomb, and then the stare down and the show seems like they're pivoting to that. I'm not sure they've done enough to keep Balor elevated where anyone will see Balor as a threat to Seth's title, but they, I think, will look at Balor as a good opponent for a good match. And, you know, sometimes the whole goal is just seeing Balor or seeing somebody get beat who you want to see get beat. And so that can be part of the motivation for fans to be into the match, even if they don't think there's a chance or a good chance of a title change. What do you think of Priest's performance in the ring with Seth? A pretty lengthy main event match. The knock on Priest is he's always on the cusp of having main event quality matches, but falls just a notch short of being exciting. Now, this match got a This Is Awesome chant. It went 22 minutes. It was competitive. It was against a world-class, you know, top-of-his-generation wrestler in Seth Rollins. What'd you think?
I think he did enough of his part. I think he stepped up for the occasion, and this is the second time because he more than carried his part in that Bad Bunny match. So,
oh yeah,
I think he's kind of on a streak. He's kind of at that level that they want him. I would like to see him against, you know, somebody not as skilled as Seth and given that time to see what he can do. But when you plug
him up,
you mean
Seth and Bad Bunny? Because Bad Bunny is amazingly skilled too.
He can certainly hold up his end, and I think those two matches prove it.
Cool. What do you think just of the portrayal so far since we last talked of Seth winning the title and the way the championship he holds is being presented? I know, you know, I took note of Corey Graves saying that Seth holds the title that makes him the best wrestler, signifies he's the best wrestler on Raw. I don't know if they're going to use that same language with Reigns or if they're going to broaden it out to the best wrestler in all of WWE. My hunch is they'll probably be brand specific, which sort of, you know, underlines one of the downsides of having two world titles is you're no longer representing the whole company. But how do you grade or what's your feeling on Seth as champion and how they're framing and presenting him so far?
Now, I'm personally still not sold of it being anything more than a secondary title, but I will give them credit because they're doing everything they can to make it seem important, and they're building up title matches. They're giving them plenty of time, putting up quality opponents. They have a couple more matches like this, and they might, you know, they might even convert me over to making it seem like a big deal. But so far, so good. I think they've done everything they can to position it. I'm just not quite sold just yet, but if they keep going this course, I think they're on to something.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I know it's a triggering question for so many people. You know, there you get rants. Mostly the rants are negative towards there being a second title, and the people who are okay with it are less passionate. And, you know, I think sort of are bemused at the passion of those who are against it. But if it's Seth Rollins and I didn't think some of his lines early in the show were good. There was some pretty lame scripting for him. And so in that sense, I don't think it was a strong night for him on the microphone. But overall, I mean, he looks the part. I mean, you can say he's a goof and he's over the top and he's obnoxious, but it does seem to be working. But when that bell rings, I mean, he does bring it. There's good stuff. But, I mean, I don't know. His glittery golden pineapple outfit made him look like a golden shiny pineapple right out of the, you know, Becky Lynch heel run, where it's just like, what you going to show up in this week? And I get a kick out of it. I mean, it works well enough for me. You know, and you know, they're playing up him being a fighting champion, and he, you know, proved it started to build his case for that tonight with his open challenge answered by Priest coming into tonight and then successfully defending it. So, you know, I mean, so far so good in terms of actually following through on the mission statement of the title. If you're going to win people over, you don't want to have a mission statement and frame it a certain way and then not actually deliver on it.
Right. And also, if they want us to take the title a little more serious, they might need to tone down on some of the cartoonish aspects of Seth's presentation. I've never been a fan of it. And as you pointed out, you know, it wasn't his best night on the mic. And I tend to tune some of it out because I know it's just going to be silliness and whatnot. So that's something they may need to address as going forward with Seth. It's easier to take the title and him more serious if you kind of tone down those aspects. But I know fans like to have fun with that and what they're going to wear this week, that type of thing. So maybe if you can get some kind of balance, perhaps.
Yep, yep. All right, well, let's pause and introduce the show. We've got an on-site correspondent who's going to be joining us. We welcome your phone calls and your emails to lead our discussion about this three-hour episode of Raw in different directions. More hype than usual for SmackDown. I think they were buoyed by the 2.5-plus million audience and that massive number of social media views for the big Bloodline angle last Friday. And we got a Paul Heyman promo hyping SmackDown. We're going to talk about that angle also on this show, since it was, you know, part of the hype during Raw tonight, and certainly the number one topic. What will Jay do? Will Jay Uso choose to stay with his brother Solo? I love the dramatic pause with Heyman before saying Solo, and stand by the tribal chief, or else, as Heyman added again after a little dramatic pause. So lots to talk about, but first let's introduce ourselves. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, June 5th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter over 35 years ago, and also the website pwtorch.com nearly 25 years ago, and the host of various podcasts, including this, the Wade Keller Post Show, and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. They are separate feeds. One has a red logo, this one. The regular podcast feed has a blue logo. Otherwise, they look the same. My face and name are on it. And the Blue Logo Show tomorrow will feature Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net as my guest co-host. He joins me every 3 weeks on our flagship. We've got a lot to talk about, a lot to catch up on since the last time Jason was on with me 3 weeks ago. Right now, the latest show is a 5 years ago flashback to a really special interview for me, Mick Foley. I talked about this in the introduction, I think he is the person who I have the longest number of years between my first interview with him and my latest interview with him. I've seen two of his stand-up shows. We talked about that in this interview and so many other topics. It's an evergreen interview, but also a time capsule of sorts in that 5 years ago, Mick was talking about Roman Reigns' struggles to get over and many other fascinating topics. It's a nearly two-hour interview, and I highly encourage you to listen if you haven't yet. Some of those interviews that I've done that we put up in our 5 and 10 years ago flashbacks are so good. I mean, the wrestlers who I interviewed just brought it, opened up, gave so many details on so many different topics and so much backstage insight. So check that out if you haven't yet. You can search Wade Keller on your podcast app to subscribe. You can also go to our website, pwtorch.com, to find links. But the easiest way is on your podcast app, search Wade Keller, and subscribe to both the red logo and the blue logo. While you're at it, search PW Torch, and you can subscribe to the PW Torch Daily Cast, a different show every day of the week with a different theme from our team at the Torch. And then also the charcoal-colored logo is our PW Torch VIP free sample feed. And within that, you can also upgrade and get all of the VIP shows using your Apple account directly. It's just a single click on your iPhone when you subscribe for free to the PW Torch VIP feed. You get free samples no matter what, and then you can upgrade within the app using your Apple account and get all the latest VIP shows on a feed, including ad-free versions of this show. The commercial breaks, in-house ads, and third-party ads, digital insertion ads are all not in the VIP version. So it's a nice streamlined listening experience, but you also get the Fix with Todd Martin, Everything with Richard Wade, our post-pay-per-view roundtables, and so much more. You can also go VIP in different ways through Patreon, credit card, or PayPal. Details at pwtorch.com/govip. The other voice you hear so far on the show is Darren Lilly. He is a pwtorch.com contributor and pwtorch VIP podcaster covering Impact Wrestling, but he also joins me regularly reviewing mostly Raw these days. And Darren, it's great to have you back talking about tonight's episode.
Well, thanks for having me. Looking forward to chatting about the show.
Absolutely. So speaking of which, the on-site correspondent, I mentioned that earlier. Well, let's go to an on-site correspondent. Now, this is Kevin, who attended tonight in Hartford. Kevin, just want to confirm that to you, and welcome to the show.
Hey, Wade. Yep, it's Kevin calling from Hartford. How you doing?
Doing very well. So how was the show tonight?
Oh, it was amazing. I'm actually in the concourse because I know you said you like to get the feel of the crowd, so I'm just walking out among the masses.
That's
after
so cool.
An awesome show.
That's cool. So thumbs up to the show. What was the highlight for you?
The Seth Rollins response and the crowd today was just amazing. Like, every time Rollins came out, the place erupted. And it's one of the biggest crowds I've ever seen here. I came to Money in the Bank a few years ago, and I come to all the TV tapings, but the crowd today was amazing. But every time Seth came out, they just couldn't stop singing his song, and it was just electric.
Was there a close second to Seth's response with anyone?
To be honest with you, I don't think so. I mean, Dominic Mysterio got a great heel reaction. I mean, they just wouldn't let him talk. It was amazing. So I would say on the heel side, Dominic Mysterio was heads and shoulders the most booed superstar that was there today. But as for face reactions, nobody got a Seth Rollins reaction. Becky Lynch might have been a close second, but,
yeah.
But there was just nobody at Seth's level tonight.
Interesting. Darren, do you want to jump in with a question for Kevin?
Sure. Did you get a sense that the crowd was accepting the new title and that title match as a big deal? Were they anticipating it? Could you get a sense of that?
Well, it's funny you said that because they flashed the graphic throughout the night, and every time the graphic came on, the people just exploded. And then even when Samantha Irving announced Seth out and he took the belt and raised it above his head, like, the place erupted. So I think – and having Priest as a good heel foil tonight, I think, was a good kind of opponent for Seth in his first title match, because it just seemed like people were booing. I don't know if it came across on TV, but it was, like, super loud through their whole match. And I think Priest was just a good person for Seth to go against. And then when he overcame him after the Finn Balor interference, you know, the place erupted again. I just think it was a good starting point for the Seth Rollins title run.
Mm-hmm. And I had a follow-up about Cody. I noticed when he came out and they did his song and when they did the whoa and everybody got a loud reaction. But outside of that, how did the crowd react to him? Are they still into him, did you feel?
You know what's funny? This show is so long that I totally forgot about Cody Rhodes. And I just thought his segment with Miz was just forgettable. But he did get a pretty good reaction. But, you know, 3.5 hours, I totally forgot that he came out. But the crowd seemed to be into him. I mean, they were excited when he came out. Everybody was singing his song. That seemed to be the theme of the night, too. Everybody that had a singable song, their songs were singing along to him. But, yeah, he was pretty popular. I just apologize. I totally forgot that he was even here.
No problem. You mentioned Dominic earlier, and did it seem like you saw something kind of special in terms of the heel heat Dominic had? I mean, obviously, it's a sign of confidence in Dominic that he's getting to be kind of the bridge for Cody between now and the Lesnar rematch. There might be somebody else in there too, but setting up a feud with Cody, who is their co-top star on Raw on the men's side, along with Seth, seems like an endorsement of him. How did Dominic come across? Did he seem to own his space in the ring, and did the crowd booing live up to what you've seen on TV and PLEs leading up to tonight?
I'm glad you brought him up, because I'll be honest, when Dominic Mysterio first came on the scene, I hated him, couldn't stand him, and turned the channel every time that he came on. But now when he comes out, it's like must-see TV. And even his entrance at WrestleMania, I just couldn't look away. And then tonight when he came out, he just seemed prime for the moment. Like the crowd, I've just never seen that. And it's the good kind of heat. Like, it's like we want to hate him, but I think we respect what he's doing, and we're booing him out of respect. But, I mean, there was like a three-minute period when he tried to talk where the crowd just wouldn't stop booing him. And it was funny because Cody kind of egged on the crowd, but the crowd didn't need it because we were just showering him with boos. And it's just amazing to see where he started and where he is now. He's like one of the people you look forward to coming to see, because to me, he's at that tier of – to me, he's their number one heel. I mean, outside of the guy on SmackDown, because he's the greatest of all time, but that's a different story. But as for their top heel, Dominic Mysterio is just—he's just killing it right now.
It is crazy. It is crazy what he's done, and I think it's blindsided some people. I think some people are still in denial, or resentful, or don't want to admit what a success he has been, and frankly, his improvement in the ring. So it doesn't—you know—it doesn't just stick out as somebody who's over but can't deliver in the ring. I'm not saying he's a world-class worker by any means yet, but he's passing the bar needed to not. Get it to not slow down that heel heat. So that's pretty cool. Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler, did the crowd treat them as big stars? And it seemed like there was a hot tag that Chance and Carter had. I can't remember who tagged whom, but it didn't get a great big crowd pop. So I was kind of curious about the ebb and flow of the crowd investment in a match that probably lasted longer than most fans figured at 7 minutes. And for most people in that building, I would venture to say they weren't familiar with Chance and Carter. Not saying it was only 10% who knew who they were, but I bet most people had not followed them in NXT. So what was your take on the length of the match and the crowd interest in that?
So, what's funny? Earlier in the night, they showed a video package of Carter and Chance, and I was like, that's interesting. Why are they showing us that during a commercial? And then sure enough, they brought them out and had them face the tag champs. When they came out, they got no reaction. It's kind of amazing how, and I think I might have heard this on one of your shows, how Ronda Rousey is just kind of almost like mid-card filler right now when she came in with such great steam. It's just like she's not interesting anymore. Like, you don't get excited to see Ronda Rousey. And I was surprised that they gave Chance and Carter so much offense in that match, because I thought it was going to be a squash. And they even let them hit their finisher, which was that reverse DDT. I don't even know what you call it. The flip that Chance did. They hit that, and people actually bought it as a false finish, which I was surprised because
wow.
I didn't think anybody really could have believed that they were going to win, especially it being their Raw debut. But it got them pretty good bite. Like, a lot of people were, like, shocked that they even got to that point. But like you said, it went longer than I thought it was going to go, but I thought the outcome was pretty predictable. But it's amazing how Ronda Rousey went from headlining a WrestleMania to just kind of being a mid-card filler at this point.
Did Zoe Stark hold the crowd's attention for ring entrances and the 3 minutes roughly she was in the ring, and did it seem like Trish helped in that regard? How did that come across in person?
Unfortunately, like, I'm a big Zoe Stark fan. I've watched her all the way through NXT, so I was excited to see her. And I'm glad that she's working with Trish Stratus, but between that and then the Indashir squash with Cedric and Shelton, the crowd seemed dead for that. I think they were ready for the main event at that point, but both of those two segments coming down the stretch just got just got no reaction. And I'm surprised because everybody loves Trish, but even when she came out, she didn't really get a reaction either.
Interesting. Now, a bonus match that they didn't advertise, Gunther versus Kevin Owens, that also went quite a ways, quite a long time, 17 minutes. I mean, curious if they fans were also buying the idea that Owens might win, despite, of course, you know, probably emotionally getting wrapped up in it, but intellectually, most fans probably figured it wouldn't happen. But talk about the emotional investment of the fans during that roller coaster match.
Well, everybody loves Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn at this point. And I think Gunther is probably the heel that's going to be the top heel of 2024. I was surprised that we got that match. I was surprised it went so long. To me, it was almost like a main event match. It just stinks that it has to end with a distraction roll-up. But, I mean, the crowd was into that from the beginning to the end. It got, you know, the classic "This is awesome" chant, which it was, because that was a pretty exciting match. Gunther never disappoints, and Kevin Owens is a professional. So I thought that was one of the highlights of the night that none of us were really expecting.
Yeah, very much so. You talked about happenings before and maybe perhaps after the show. Tell us about anything that didn't air on television, either pre-Raw matches and maybe anything at all that happened after they went off the air after the main event.
I didn't get there till the end of main event, so I saw Apollo Crews defeat Akira Tozawa. I think Candice LeRae beat Xia Li, but I wasn't in there for that. Somebody was just talking about it in my section. And then after the show, Seth called Damian Priest back to the ring for a handshake, and Priest reluctantly gave it to him, which got a good reaction from the crowd. I mean, we didn't get a dark match, but I thought they gave us a lot of wrestling. I don't know if you noticed, but there was very little talking today, which was kind of surprising. I'm more of a fan of the sports entertainment aspect, so I didn't get a lot of that, but there was a lot of good wrestling tonight.
Yeah, you had the Seth Priest in-ring promo, and you had the Miz TV Cody in-ring promo. But I think that was it, other than just some, you know, pretty rapid-fire backstage promos or vignettes.
Which was kind of surprising, because you think there'd be more builds, especially to the upcoming Money in the Bank. But outside of the two segments you talked about, there really wasn't much in-ring, non-match type of segments.
Yeah. Darren, is there anything else you want to ask?
Oh, it's my favorite question. And what was the t-shirt that you saw the most of? Was there a particular wrestler that you saw their shirt very often?
Oh, it was Cody Rhodes. I actually went with an 8-year-old, and I wanted to just talk to you guys about that in a second. I went with an 8-year-old, and just watching wrestling through an 8-year-old's reaction was priceless. I thought that was actually the best part of the show, because at this point in my life, like, I've watched enough wrestling where I don't bite on some false finishes, and you kind of know who's going to win. But just watching his reaction to, like, the whole show, like, kickouts and entrances, it was actually one of my favorite shows, getting to experience that through his eyes. And I don't know if people have kids, and if they don't, they should go to wrestling with kids, because it's just way more enjoyable watching, just because it brings you back to when you just didn't know what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because like Shayna Baszler and Ronda Rousey weren't losing, but in his eyes, he thought the faces. Because I was like, Luke, who do you think is going to win? He's like, I like the team in blue. Now, we all know they had no chance of winning, but in his eyes, he's like, hey, they got a chance. And just his excitement and his enthusiasm was just amazing. But to answer your question, Darren, Cody Rhodes shirts were all over the place. Like, every concession merchandise stand, I went to all of them, because I know that's one of the questions that you guys normally ask. Like, you couldn't find anything. The signed photos were sold out. The signed belts were sold out. Just about all of his shirts were sold out. I mean, I love Roman Reigns to death. He's probably the only reason I still watch wrestling. I'm still questioning why they didn't pull the trigger on Cody Rhodes, because it seems like everyone loves him.
Wow.
Very good. Kevin, is there anything else you want to add about your experience tonight?
No, I just want to say, Wade, thank you for everything you do. I love all your shows. I just want to thank you. This is awesome that I have a chance to speak to you and just tell you, like, I just love listening to you. I look forward to all your stuff every week, and, you know, I appreciate you giving me the chance to be on one tonight.
Kevin, thank you so much. You made my day. I appreciate your time tonight and that you're able to join us, and certainly your kind words at the end there.
All right, no problem. You guys have a great night, and I'll continue listening.
Excellent. I love Kevin's advice, Darren. Just, you know, like, if you don't go with a kid, maybe that's not your thing. You know, I can think of a few people that don't want to go to a show with a kid. They want to enjoy it on their own terms. Watch the kids. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I can recall in my head at recent WWE shows, when I say recent, you know, over the last handful of years, where I've paid particular attention to how the kids react to certain acts, mm-hmm. and how they react differently to spots. And the kids aren't everything. I mean, you know, they are a future, blah, 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 all that stuff. They are not the only audience WWE should be catering to. And I think you can over cater to kids, and you can dumb – oh, that sounds bad. But you can dumb down the product for newbies to the point where you turn off people like us who've seen a lot. Mm-hmm. And as Kevin said, kind of know the game, know what's going to happen sometimes and not going to happen. Doesn't mean you can't enjoy it, even if you know it's about to happen. But there is something about that. And I mean, most of us were fans as kids and remember what it was like when it was all about who was going to win and who was going to lose and who's your favorite. There's a lot of adults who still look at it through that lens. Their favorites aren't always who the company assigns as the baby faces, but if they're doing their jobs right, universally, kids and adults should largely be cheering and rooting for the same people, wanting to see them succeed. But when you see it, when you see the kids react a certain way, it does kind of make you realize it's your. I haven't said this as often lately because our callers have been better about it. But I used to say a lot, it's not all about you. You know, when it comes to what you want to see in wrestling, sometimes, you know, you got to step back and go, this isn't for me, but is it working for so many other people? That, you know, certainly is evident with kids. Anyway, Darren, you want to say anything about that?
Yeah, but it is an interesting perspective. Years ago, I took like one of my little cousins to the show, and it did add such an excellent point that he brought up. It is a different perspective to just see what they're into and what they're enthusiastic about, that kind of thing. So, yes, I highly recommend it.
Yeah, yep. All right, very good. So, speaking of on-site correspondents, Jay in Hartford, a regular on this show and a longtime Torch listener and reader, is joining us also. Jay, welcome to the show. You attended Raw tonight. How was it?
Hey, good evening, Wade, and co-host, forgive me, I just dialed in, so I'm not sure who's on with you. But yeah,
Darren,
the
Lilly.
Show was great. The show was great. Darren, hello. Thank you, Wade.
How you doing?
First of all, is my audio okay? Because I'm still in the car, so if it's too noisy, I can wait until after someone else goes, unless you think I'm good.
You're fine. It's not great, but it's just fine. So yeah, we're good.
Okay. I'm like maybe 4 minutes from home, so it'll get better. The show
was
great,
no,
and I am just going to go ahead and jump on this Bring a Kid bandwagon. I took my 8-year-old son.
Yeah.
So I did hear the previous caller say he went with an 8-year-old. I'm like, yeah, here we go, right? So not only did I take my 8-year-old son, but I tried to take a couple notes. The first note that I wrote down was that behind me, like as soon as we got to our seats, Wade, there was a kid about maybe 12, and he just randomly – says to me and my buddy, he goes, hey, this is my brother. He's with me. He's 8, and this is his first show. And he was so excited. So it's like, that was for the 8-year-olds, I guess. But he was excited. So I went with my 8-year-old son. This was his second show, Wade. I think I called you when I took him to his first show in like 2019. So it was really interesting to see how he reacted at age 8 as opposed to 4 when it was a really long night for him. But anyway, and I went with my a longtime childhood friend of mine who no longer watches the product consistently, but he and I will often, you know, meet up at WWE shows because, you know, it's our thing, right? It's how we bonded as kids. So it's very interesting to always see his perspective as someone who does not watch the current product and to see my son's perspective. And I'll say, first of all, that all three of us had a great time. I'm just going to start with Cody is over. He's over. He's over. He's the man. The shirts were everywhere. It's funny because when Judgment Day made their first appearance, they had that thing All Rise for the Judgment Day. I thought it was hilarious because when they came out, like everyone down on the lower level, like rose to their feet. I'm like almost as if like in unison, like this is what we're supposed to do, All Rise for the Judgment Day. But when Cody came out, I mean the arena, everyone rose to their feet. Like it was, I'm like he was the star of the night. He is the biggest face in the company right now, bar none. And I'm just going to push back a little bit on what the previous caller said, right? So I was very disappointed.
Jay, he said a lot of nice things about me. I don't know if I want to let you push back. He was great. I liked having a lot.
No. All of that.
Watch your
mouth. But on his Cody comment,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I really wanted Cody to win at Mania, and even until now, I've been like, yeah, they should have gone with it, but maybe, just maybe, they knew what they were doing, because he's not lost any steam. He's not lost any steam. So, depending upon how long they plan to drag it out, I'm okay with the fact that they didn't do it and he has remained over, and they booked him in a way to remain over. And I mean, it just brought my heart joy to see like everyone. And Hartford, Wade, I've said this before, that when I attended shows, say, 10 years back or 5 years back, I always thought Hartford was way more of a casual crowd. A lot of parents taking their kids. And so there are a lot of people who weren't as into the product. It started to turn a little bit when I went to Money in the Bank in 2019, because obviously it's a pay-per-view. So you had people from, Boston, New York, wherever. And that was the liveliest crowd I had ever been to in Hartford. Tonight, it's probably the liveliest Raw crowd I've ever seen. The arena, it wasn't a sellout, but it was certainly close. It was full. I don't think it was below 90, maybe 95%. A few seats I saw scattered here and there. I'm not sure if the previous caller had an opinion on that, but to me, it was pretty packed. And I think, as I looked at the crowd, I'm thinking, this has to be like bloodline, like driven. Like, that story over the last couple of years has been so great. And this reign with Roman and Sammy and all of it, there's a reason to care about the product right now. And we haven't been able to say that about WWE in a long time. Just with the way sometimes they present their storylines and, a lot of the things we saw that were just, annoyances over the last 2 years. So I'll pause and maybe let you guys ask me some things, but it was a great show.
Yeah. So did you get there early enough to see the matches before Raw?
Yes, I got there in time to see. I'll go ahead. It was Candice LeRae against Xia Li, and Candice LeRae, she got the. It was weird because I expected her to get the first, star of the night big pop, but it wasn't big enough. I'm like, she's the first person to come out. I still think a lot of people have no clue who she is. And that's sad to say, or just don't care. Again, it was a lively crowd, but I just expected her being the first person to come out. I expected a lot more as far as the reaction. But, yeah, they popped a little bit. First match, they were into it, and she beat Xia Li. But, again, Xia Li, someone else who we rarely see or hear from. So it was hard to get into it, I'll say, just on behalf of the crowd. I mean, I think they tried just for that first match excitement, but it still wasn't what I've come to expect for a first match reaction. From there, I actually had to go get pizza for my son, so I missed the next match, but it was Apollo Crews defeating Akira Tozawa, from what I understand, which I just asked my son about in the car, and he was so excited to see Tozawa, and I didn't realize that that I had missed it. I'm like, oh, you saw Akira Tozawa? And he's like, yeah, and he no longer wears the black. He had on the red and white, and, so that's fun. Yeah, I did see the first of those two matches before the start of Raw.
Very good. Darren, go ahead and ask Jay a question about his experience there.
Cool. We were kind of on the topic of, taking kids to shows and getting a different perspective. Was the three-hour show too long? Did you say your son was 9 years old?
He's eight. And, yes,
eight.
It was
okay.
Too long.
And did you think it was too long?
Yes, absolutely, because when I took him a few years ago, when he was four, he fell asleep, right? Tonight, same thing. But he lasted a bit longer. He, when I say fell asleep, he really started struggling by the time the main event came around.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, you still woke? You hanging in there, buddy? But it was a struggle. Like, come on, his bedtime is like 9 o'clock, And so here we are, 10:30, and he's just like, he was really trying. Even 3 hours is too long. I've always been on that bandwagon that 3 hours is too long for Raw.
Yeah.
2 hours. My buddy asked me, he's like, hey, when you go to Raw Live, do you record the show at home? I said, man, I record it every week because I can't watch it. I can't sit and watch 3 hours starting at 8 o'clock. I'm usually busy and I'll start at, 8:39 and try to fast forward through. So, I mean, that's the one thing that works for me going to the show live is that I get to experience everything as it happens, not necessarily after the fact, because I do a lot of DVR and just fast forwarding. But yeah, it is too long, and I felt, and that's the other thing. I usually, if I go alone or just with adult friends, I'll stay as long as I can stay. I stay for, you know, if there's going to be a dark match after or whatever. Like, so when the main event ended, Seth, I believe what you all got on television was Seth and Finn Balor having a face down or face off, whatever.
Right.
Stare down.
Yeah.
And so after that, and my buddy, he's like, "You ready?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm ready." Because Trevor, my son Trevor, he was tired. He was struggling. I'm like, "I got to get you home for school." So as we headed out, though, once we got out into like the concourse area, I could hear someone on the mic, and I couldn't tell if it was Seth, but I think it was. It sounded like he had maybe gotten back on the microphone. So I don't know. Someone was on the mic, and I'm assuming they were going to say something that led to another match. Maybe someone else can confirm, or maybe they were just going to say thank you, Hartford. But yeah, just to the point about it being a long show and the kids, like, when I have my son, it's tough to really stay and catch everything. And I usually like to catch, you know, if there's going to be a match after, or even I've experienced a lot of like going around to the side of the arena and we see the superstars that like pull out, but I just do that when I'm alone, not when I'm with my son. Yeah. It was a long night for
him. Talk about the lowest point in the show. Were there any points that stood out to you where it's like, ah, they're losing the crowd or this just isn't clicking or working?
Yeah, a little bit. I think I'd go with, Zoe Stark and Natalya may have been the lowest. Was it? Yeah. Okay. Because Becky fought Sonya. Yeah. Zoe Stark and Natalya, like, it just was, for being, I don't know if the term legacy star, but Natalya being someone who's been around a while and having that heart name and all of that, you would think that people knew, you know, they know her clearly, but the reaction just wasn't there. And the match was just what it was, you know, just a decent, quick, you know, win for Zoe, which you kind of knew it would be. But yeah, that, to me, that may have been the lowest point of the night. Like, and of course, Zoe's new, so people are still getting used to her. I think the association with Trish will help her overall, but it's, you know, hasn't paid off just yet. Like, even when they probably could have done a little more with Trish and Zoe earlier on, because of course the kids, right? My son's just like, "Oh, they're just standing there. I'm like, "Yeah, Trevor, they're watching." I'm trying to explain to him, like, you know, they're just, I can't remember how I explained it, you know, but we understood what they're doing, right? They're sizing up their competition for a future match or something, whatever. But and later when Zoe came out for the match, like, my buddy didn't even realize it was the same person that had been on the stage alongside Trish earlier, you know? So I'd say, "Oh yeah, this is, you know, Zoe Stark who came out earlier." And it's like, okay. So the match is tough for when people don't know who, you know, who the talent is. So that was the lowest point though, from my standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Do you think Seth was far and away the most over, followed by Becky and Cody or Kevin Owens? Like, how do you rank them? And, from your seats and what you garnered from the crowd reactions?
Oh man, wait, that may be the toughest question I've had to answer in, I don't know, quite some time. Cody, man, Seth, I'm going Cody. When I say the crowd, like, I couldn't find anyone sitting, just about everyone rose to their feet. Now, Seth, his entrance, the first entrance of the night, he was over. We were singing, and it was, and you may get a kick out of this on television. I kind of get annoyed with the singing, but you're there live in the moment. I was like singing away, like, who cares what I think when I'm at home? I'm here now. Like, this is it. Like, you got to get involved. I'm going Cody number one, just from how I saw that crowd rise to their feet like a wave or something. But that doesn't mean Seth would be like 1A. He was just as over, but the visual of the crowd is what would have me put Cody at the very top. But Seth was clearly over. And when you bring up Becky, as much as I love her, when you want to talk in terms of like far and away, I'd go Seth and Cody were far and away over above everybody else. And then maybe I'd bring in Becky at number three, but Kevin Owens may actually have beaten her out. He got a huge pop. And I heard a little bit of your previous caller. I'm a big KO fan. So when they tease KO and Gunther in the back, I'm saying to my friend who wasn't as familiar with Gunther, I'm like, they're not giving us KO versus Gunther. I can't believe we're getting KO versus Gunther. I'm like, this isn't happening. And it happened. Like, KO's in the ring, and then Gunther comes out. I'm like, this is not going to happen. They're going to have some shenanigans. It's going to be a brawl. And they gave us a match, and they gave us an awesome match. And during the match, I wish I had all night to tell you about the 8-year-old behind me. It was his first show, again, as I said. And he would mimic everything his older brother did. So, and they were like the chant starting, like, crew. Like, those two kids would start the chant, and everyone in our section would, like, actually join in with them. I was very impressed. But during KO and Gunther, those two kids kept trying to start a "This is awesome" chant, and it wasn't picking up. And I said to my buddy, I'm like, "Too early. This match isn't awesome yet." And they got there, though. Kevin Owens and Gunther got there. That match was incredible. I would love to see it again. They need to, you know, they're tag champs right now, so maybe he doesn't need to win the IC title right now. But I'd love to see them fight in an IC title match. It was just, I can't believe they gave that to us. If you say, what's the one thing you'd remember besides Cody, who I love seeing in person tonight, it's just the fact that they gave us Kevin Owens versus Gunther, and I feel like that was special. So I'm glad they gave us that and that I was there to see it. And I hope they get to do it again for an even longer period of time. But I'm like, yeah, like, wrestling fans know, like, this is special. I mean, clearly we're not going to get Gunther in a match every week on Raw. So that right there, I thought, meant something. But against Kevin Owens, I'm just like, I'm still like, thank you, WWE. I had no idea I would get that tonight. That satisfied me from a standpoint of, I'm going, it'll be fun, but we won't get the bloodline. You know, but we got Paul Heyman backstage. And way that – I don't get to call and talk bloodline much because I don't see SmackDown Live. It's always DVR the next day. But just watching the highlight package from Friday Night SmackDown was almost enough for me. Like, okay, they're not here live, but storyline is so – you know, just so much better than anything I've ever seen done by WWE. So even to just sit there, I mean, I was watching the video packages if I was watching it all happen again. Like, I know this is Raw, not SmackDown, but, you know, give them all the Emmys or whatever. I know they don't get Emmys, but they deserve them. Jay, Roman, Doug, it's just the best storyline I've seen for my money in WWE history, and I'm just going to stick with that. I tried to explain that to my friend. He's like, better than I can't remember the examples, but I'm like yes, it was all good. But and we at some point started talking about Randy Savage versus Jake Roberts, and I'm like, no, the storyline's better. That was great. I got a Savage shirt right now, right? He's like one of my favorites ever. But I'm like, no, the in terms of storytelling consistently over a period of time, the bloodline, this, it blows everything else out of the water.
Yeah, it's worth the praise it receives, I would argue. Good stuff. When Paul Heyman appeared on the big screen, I assume you got to see that promo video. What kind of reaction did he get, and was that like a bigger reaction than typical for something on the big screen?
That was interesting. That was interesting to me because I really like Paul Heyman, and it's the closest thing we got to, you know, the bloodline being there live, right? But he did not get, and maybe it's because he was backstage, he didn't get as much of a pop as I thought he would get. And I also remember there were people that had started to get up to, you know, go for whatever, the restroom or food or whatever. And then I'm thinking, like, who walks out on Paul Heyman? But I think when people noticed Heyman was cutting a promo, there wasn't much movement after that. Everyone kind of stayed to listen. But I think they're doing such – because Paul Heyman, most times he still gets that pop when he walks out. So I think had he walked out, he would have gotten that pop. But Roman is doing such a great job at his heel work right now that even Roman, who gets cheered, is also getting heavy boos. You know what I mean? So I think part of that was just like, when I saw Heyman, I wanted to cheer him, but I'm like, I can't cheer him. Like, no, I don't like these guys right now. So I think sometimes that plays with the reaction. I wouldn't call it a lack of a reaction, but it was just like, it's Heyman, let's pay attention. But it wasn't necessarily like a pop. I expected more of a buzz, like, yay, Heyman's here. It was just more so I think everyone listening, which counts for something, right? Because it's Paul Heyman, so you're going to stop, you're going to listen. So besides saying his name along with him, a few people did that. It was pretty much people really engaged, I think, in listening to what he had to say.
Very good. Darren, is there anything you want to ask Jay?
Yes. You mentioned that your friend that you went with is a casual viewer. Did he discover anyone new that kind of piqued his interest, perhaps?
So I'm going to – I don't even think he's casual, right? He pretty much doesn't follow the product. We were talking about he follows like Edge and a couple people, a couple guys that he knows like on like social media. And he listens to a lot of Ariel Helwani, so he knows certain things from that. But he enjoyed Ricochet. He enjoyed Gunther. And then of course he from his previous time watching, he was very familiar with like, your Cody Rhodes and your he was asking me questions like, hey, is Lashley still around or is he was surprised to, he's like, is there anyone else that's still around that I would be surprised to see besides, like, Rey Mysterio, because I know Rey's still around. I'm thinking, I couldn't really even think of anyone. I'm like, Jericho, but he's in AEW. And then eventually Trish comes out, and I'm like, oh, yeah, Trish, But I would say he really enjoyed Ricochet, and I think he was impressed by Gunther as well, which I'll say this. He said initially upon seeing Gunther, Gunther reminded him of Alberto Del Rio, actually, which I kind of get as far as from a, like the physical stature standpoint, but I'm like, yeah, for my money, Gunther's better, but maybe I have to follow up with him and say, hey, what'd you think? Like, did he still remind you of Del Rio, or would you put one over the other? I may have to give him that follow-up question.
Cool.
Darren, anything else?
No, I think that's all I had.
Yeah, Jay, is there anything else you want to share about what you what jumped out to you tonight? Any other notes or mental notes? Yeah.
Yeah, if you don't mind, I'm looking at I'm just saying a couple things. I wrote down the crowd was still arriving 20 minutes in. So when I got there, I'm like, oh, man, this the arena's packed, but there were some empty seats. And like I said, maybe within the first half hour, you still had folks getting there. So I wrote down 95%, which is probably what it was by the time all was said and done. I'm looking at my note that says Cody over in all caps. So when Dominic, I could not wait for Dominic. I'm like, please be here tonight. When they said like, oh, don't worry about Dominic here. I'm like, don't tell me they're not here. Like I paid money so I can boo this kid. And the crowd did not fail. Hartford was ready. We booed. I can't tell you anything he said in his promo, like nothing. Like, I don't have a clue, and I didn't care. I didn't want to know. I'm like, I'm going to boo because I don't want to hear you. I'm going to be a part of this fun. And my favorite part, actually, I don't know if you all noticed it on television, but I think Miz or someone was like, oh, don't boo Dominic and Rhea. They were all trying to stop it, and we kept booing, right? Cody actually said sarcastically something about, oh, okay, stop booing him. And we, like, actually stopped, which gave me a chuckle. I wrote it down. I'm like, we stopped booing. And then when he, like, started talking to me, we just started back up. It was amazing. It was the best. So Cody was over. Dominic is over as a heel. Seth and Damian, as far as, like, talking about the believability of the matches and the kids and things like that, Seth and Damian, you knew Seth Rollins would win. And it was a great match. It was a great match, but just there was a spot in particular that I would say popped the crowd, if to use that term, right? When Seth's going into his suplex off the top into the Falcon Arrow, but Damian reversed it and hit a suplex, and then Seth reversed it back and was able to complete the Falcon Arrow. So that was a great, like, the crowd popped for that so much so that I actually had to write it down. that's pretty. Oh, and then this last one, right? It's the highlight. It involves the kids. Two things about the kids. So the pair of brothers behind me where the little brother mocked the older brother, it was great because the little brother was 8 and he had like a bit of not an accent. I wouldn't really say speech impediment, but he was 8. So it'd be like he wouldn't understand everything the older brother was saying. So I remember the older brother saying, let's go, mommy, for Rhea. And then the little brother repeated, let's go, money. And like the older brother saying, let's go Rollins. And then the little brother, let's go Rollins with a W. Oh, it was cute. But then they had the DX cam. And my son, I'll say Wade, he's just started to really watch the product this year. He doesn't watch weekly per se, but he really enjoyed WrestleMania because we made an event out of it at the house. Like if we're like, hey, it's like the Super Bowl, right? And we had, we're going to eat Super Bowl food. So he was all about it. And he repeatedly likes to go back to see the Dominic Rey Mysterio match. And he also really likes to go back to see the Bad Bunny Damian Priest match from Backlash. So he's been really into the product, and but he has no clue who DX is. I don't think he's ever heard of DX. But boy, when that DX cam came, which would have been during like a commercial break for you guys, he was all about it, and he was standing up, and he was throwing up DX, and I was just like, oh God, oh God, oh God. And then he like he looked at me. He actually looked at me and asked me for permission to do the crotch chop. He kind of looked at me and gestured like, can I do it? And I said, yeah, go ahead. Why not? I'm like, yeah, go ahead. Like, mom's not here. You'll be fine. Like, I just thought it was the funniest thing, like, that he was – and, again, his previous show, he was four. So he had as much fun as a four-year-old could, but he wasn't really cheering. He wasn't, you know, doing as much as – tonight he was really involved. He was singing along to Seth's song. He was – throwing up the one when the Usos came on the screen. So, like, when you talk, Wade, I think you asked me about, like, you know, video packages or backstage stuff. I'm just going back to the Bloodline. Like, we were throwing up ones in the crowd, like the Usos had, like, walked out. Like, that's how much the crowd was into that video package replaying what happened on Friday night. So, yeah, it just – but, yeah, the kids certainly made my night. Like, those 8-year-olds, my 8-year-old and the 8-year-old behind me, they were, like – if I could go to a show with him again, both of them somehow, like that kid is there, I would love to sit by him because he was having the time of his life at his first show. Yeah, so I'm sure if I – maybe I'll try to email later because I know there's probably a lot more I can say from just the show itself outside of the live experience, just, you know, some of the things they did storyline-wise. But, it was a great experience. It really was.
Cool. Well, Jay, if you think of anything else, you can email us or even call back in during the show here. We will let you go for now, and we'll pivot to some of our other callers on hold. But thank you so much.
Absolutely.
A great eclectic mix of stories, and that's what we look for. We can't attend every Raw and SmackDown and Dynamite in person, but these last two on-site correspondents gave us a vicarious journey into the arena tonight, so we appreciate that.
Glad to do so. Thanks, Wade. Thanks, Darren.
You bet.
Thank you.
All right. If you are willing to be an on-site correspondent because you're attending a future Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, or Collision, drop me a line, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. Please put in the subject line, the date and the city, so that I can stay a little bit, organized a little bit easier. And I'll be in touch and we'll set up and confirm that you can be on the show and we'll make that happen. All right. Our email, if you want to comment on Raw tonight, even if you didn't attend in person, is 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1. Keypad, that flags you on our switchboard so that we know that you want to be on the show. Again, that's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. You can also email us at WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. If you listen to our show on delay, which most people do, which is totally understandable, and we love that you do that, but you do watch the shows live, the actual shows, you can email us during or right after the show and still be of the wrestling show. Then you can still be part of our podcast that way, even if you're not able to call in and listen live. So you are invited to do so for future episodes. All right, so let's get rolling with calls. We'll go to Joe in Albany, New York first. And then Sergio is on deck. Joe, welcome. Thanks for holding. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, guys. Good chatting with you. I will say, you know, after talking or after listening to some of the other guys that were in attendance, maybe my opinions on Raw changed a little bit because I didn't think it was a bad show. But, I think the problem is that SmackDown is so good that by the time Monday Night rolls around, it feels a little deflated. I don't want to be negative, but I'm just being real here in terms of how I feel.
Sure.
It's like I stood up on Friday when Jimmy Uso mushed Roman in the face. I like stood up, you know what I mean? Like in my living room and like got closer to the TV. And I can't even, I'm 41. I've been watching wrestling since I was 8. So I remember all. I remember Macho Man getting bitten by the snake. I remember, obviously, the Attitude Era, everything, you know, in between, the Mega Powers, all of that. But I stood up and stood in front of the TV, and because I was that into that segment and so into that story. And so I think when I get to Raw, I don't know. It loses something for me a little bit, but I think part of the problem is, and this will be unpopular too, but Seth Rollins, like the character, and this is what I want you guys to weigh in on quick, is for me, I mean, I love Seth Rollins when he's wrestling. I love Seth Rollins even when he's being his character, but he's a little bit serious, you know, a little more of an edge, that side-by-side that he had with Riddle all those months ago when it got a little serious, you know, when he was chasing the title just this, you know, past couple months, weeks, or whatever, when there's like a little edge to him. But the obnoxious laughing and the song, I can understand the caller saying that being in attendance, it's fun to sing the song. But when we start off Raw and they're like, he just stands in the middle of the ring and everybody sings the song, I don't know. Like, what do you guys think about that?
Darren, throw it to you.
I've kind of touched on that a little bit. I just prefer a more serious, more focused Seth. He's kind of all over the place when he does those interviews and stuff. So that's my preference. But, I mean, he's got all kind of popularity and everything, so you can't really argue with that. But I would like to see that toned down somewhat.
Yeah, I don't know that he's in the place now that he's going to be in a year. I think being the champion of Raw, and I think he's going to hold the title for a while, is going to give him – it's going to give him the incentive to have a more serious side because he is over and his song is over. I think the main thing to cut back on is the pointless, over-the-top, incessant cackling. And I know that's sort
right.
of like a go-to signature thing for him. It's like a trait that's sort of natural. It's been a thing forever he's had. But I think the color, the bombast, the charisma, but with a sense of a wink and a nod to the audience that you know, I'm having fun, but this isn't who I am. And I know he said in that sit-down interview, this is the closest to who I am. And so I'm not quite sure how to phrase it, but like, I'm not trying to put one over on you that I'm like this all the time, because at the core, I think the Seth Rollins is the guy who wants to be recognized as the best of this generation. And yeah, that includes anybody from Japan or anybody from AEW. I don't think he wants people to say, well, there's Will Ospreay and then there's Seth a notch below. And if he can find a way to lean into that, but still wink and nod at the audience a little bit with kind of the fun of the ring entrance and the outfits, that to me is a sweet spot that I think he might be on a journey to hit, you know, to hit that sweet spot. I don't think he's there yet, but being obnoxious for the sake of being obnoxious and just turning up the volume on the cackles, I don't think he needs to do now. Like, I mean, he's in a
right.
prime
the
centerpiece spot on
like
Raw.
Front.
Yeah.
The cackle, sorry, yeah, the cackles
yep.
feel like it's like saying like, you know what I mean, which a lot of us do.
Yep.
But like is a filler word, and I think that his yep. cackle is like a filler, because again, I love him, I do, but I was starting to love him more in the last little while when there was, as I said, that edge, as you said, when the wink, the like, hey, I know I'm being ridiculous, but you all know that I know that I'm the best. And when I get in the ring, I prove that I'm the best, you know, and don't go out of line. Cause I'll, you know what I'm saying? Like just a little something. I don't want to be repetitive, but I think that's my issue. And I think that's yeah. what makes it loses it a little bit for me in terms of, you know, I'll start off the 3 hours and I'm like, ugh. But then by the end of it, I'm like, Seth Rollins is awesome. You know what I mean? Because his matches are so good. So I just, if we just yeah. find that middle ground, I think that would be great. Speaking of matches, I thought the wrestling was very good on the show. Really liked Kevin Owens and Gunther. Want to see that again. I understand why it ended the way it did. Certainly enough, I think the Katana and Cadence, I believe, I may be butchering that. But when at first I thought it was silly to have them, because I knew they were going to lose, to have them have their first match on Raw be a tag team title match. But then when I watched it, I actually didn't think it was a bad idea. That was going to be the second thing I asked you guys, and then I have one more, and then I'll be out of your hair. But what do you think about them debuting on Raw in a tag team match against Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler?
I was okay with it. I think we have an email on this, that they maybe got too much offense for Ronda and Shayna this early in their run. Like, I'm actually, like, a little concerned that Shayna and Ronda, even though, first of all, I like the way they did the match. So I think that Ronda and Shayna's seemed to have control of the match, and the only time they didn't is if they got a little cocky. But Carter and Chance got a chance to really show off what they could do with some, and build to some hope spots, and for certainly kids in the audience, as we've had evidence of, you know, believable near falls. And they got to get in a lot of moves against a credible, tough tag team. And so I don't think the idea is that they're going to immediately be feuding with Rousey and Baszler. I think the idea was, let's put them out there, and we'll serve two purposes. Ronda and Shayna are going to win, and they're going to win against this team that the announcers, and again, a lot of it is how the announcers talk about them, this long-running team with credibility coming in and making a splash early. I like the backstage segment where they were kind of bullying them and demeaning them. Oh, it's Munchkin Land, and, you know, talking about height and that kind of thing. Yeah. It made Shayna and Ronda seem like heels. But in the end, I just think Chance and Carter come out of that match, even in losing, as having created an identity by being that competitive and fighting with that kind of spirit, that they can then shift to other things, build up some credibility again, and maybe in a rematch down the line, people will remember this and go, and then, you know, I can hear Corey Graves right now in my ear going, you know, they've grown a lot since that first match with Baszler and Rousey.
Yep.
Let's see what they can bring now. So I get what they were doing. There's no only one right way to do things. There's a lot of wrong ways, but there's not only one right way. I thought this was fine. I think they can turn. I think this can not define them down. I think like having Imperium lose coming in and then building them up as the top challengers right afterwards to Sami and KO, that doesn't make sense.
Right. Yep.
So anyway,
agreed with all of that. So my last thing, I was just going to say, the talk shows. Are you with me that we need to get rid of no more talk shows? Like the with Mrs. and then KO has a ding dong. And I think in my opinion, they don't do anything for the show. In fact, I think it kind of drags down a little bit. I think they're all the same. You know, if the host, usually a heel, welcomes everybody to enter name of show. They bring out a face, a baby face, and then heel host is kind of an a-hole to the baby face, and it either ends up in a match or brief physicality, or you get what I'm saying? They're all the same. And I think that there are so many ways, like, you can accomplish the end result without the talk show, and they've diluted it, they've watered it down. Everybody has one, and if WWE had a suggestion box, and I'm sure they do, and they asked me what I would like to see changed, that would be the first thing. The first thing would be the what, but I can't really control that because that's the audience. But the second thing, real close, would be getting rid of all talk shows forever. And that is all I had to say tonight. Thank you so much for the call.
Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it. Darren, I don't think we have a Waller effect. We got Ms. TV. I don't know. I mean, what do you think about the format? Is it something you just get rid of, or do you tweak, or is it fine as is?
I can understand being frustrated with them, but I understand that they serve a purpose, and it's kind of like the entertainment portion of the show where, like tonight, it was very wrestling heavy, so that kind of helps to break it up to have segments like that. However, lately they've become a little stale and repetitive, kind of like the iCaller just pointed out, where, you know, Miz says a few jokes, they say the tiny ball things, and then he gets knocked out at the end, and that's just the pattern of how they've been doing recently. So if you're going to continue to do them, at least mix in something new, or just don't have Miz get run over every week, which is seemingly what happens. But yeah, the Grayson Waller effect, I'm not sure how that's going to be any different, but I just mix something new in, perhaps, because I mean, they're here to stay. Everybody has one, the KO show and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, just freshen it up the format a bit.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I mean, the alternative is, you know, what AEW does with Tony Schiavone standing in the middle of the ring, and then the wrestler just commandeers the microphone, and they don't really serve a purpose. I mean, it's formulaic, and some weeks are a little more inspired than others, but I'm not ready to get rid of them. I guess I'd rather just work at improving them a little. But, you know, growing up with Piper's Pit, I mean, it is something to look forward to that's different format-wise. And I do think Miz, for instance, can bring something different out in a wrestler and his interaction with them, both in building them up in his introduction if they're a heel or ripping on them as a babyface, but in a way that also builds them up because he's a heel. And then, you know, how he handles the interview can pull things out of a interview subject in a different way than just somebody standing in the ring doing the interview. So I'll vote to keep him around, but, you know, keep a close eye on making a higher percentage of them a little more original, a little less formulaic. All right. We'll go next to Sergio in Connecticut. Sergio, welcome to the show. What have you got to talk about regarding Raw tonight?
Well, it sounds like you guys already had a couple correspondence, but I was live there today, and I had a couple notes. If you don't mind me sharing them, I'll try not to be repetitive, even though I don't know what they said. But I would like to just run down a couple notes I had, if that's all right.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
All right, so shirts. Like, I always like to look at the shirts at these, you know, at all the shows, like, what's the most prevalent shirt. And the most prevalent shirt by far was the LWO shirt. Like, I just seen it everywhere, the Puerto Rico flag one and the Mexico flag one. Like, it was everywhere by so many people. I really hope eventually they, like, hit a stride, because their popularity in merch you hear is, like, up and up. And then their storylines on TV that don't include Dominic Mysterio and the Judgment Day is just kind of mediocre at best. So I'm really hoping they could hit a stride, because they are really popular. And Rhea was second. I saw a ton of different kind of incarnations of Rhea shirts, and then Cody third with the T-shirts. So I always like to check on that. Owens versus Gunther was a lot of fun. I didn't love the finish, but to me that was the best match. And I really hope they get to tangle again for the IC title not too far down the road, because that was the best match. And I felt like it had the most crowd at the edge of their seat almost to see what happened. And then kind of was deflated when the finish happened the way it was, but it was a fun match. And also, I just wanted to bring this up too. Like, this was a hot crowd. Like, I'm not sure what your other correspondent said, but this just felt like a hot crowd. Like, there was a buzz in the air. Like, I've been going to WWE shows, you know, since I can remember. And, you know, it has its ups and its downs, but this is definitely an up. Like, this feels like maybe like 5 years ago, there was – it just wasn't there. The same buzz wasn't there that used to be there.
Yep.
Seats were pretty empty, like, especially hard camera side. I've been to Hartford a bunch of times for shows, and, like, it just – sometimes it can get really dead in there, but when it's full, you know, and they're invested, it's a loud crowd. And this is definitely a crowd that's just invested in the WWE product. It seems like there's no fighting the trends that they want you to follow. Like, this is a very WWE, like, we're going to follow, cheer the baby faces, boo the heels, which is, because back in the day, like, you know, everybody booed the baby faces. It's what it was fun to do, you know. And now it's just like a very WWE, like, all right, we're following the stories and we're with you. And especially compared to AEW, who was here the first time they ever came, that show was hot, and I was like, man, this is new, this is hot, this is fun. And they're taking over WWE in Connecticut, but then the second time they came was completely dead. And AEW just feels like a cold show compared to WWE's really hot show. I think I'm the back, really, of the bloodline, as everybody thinks. But I just want to bring that up, that it really feels like, at least in my area, that the WWE product feels rejuvenated, you know?
Can you list why you think that has happened? Is it one or two or three wrestlers? Is it storylines? Is it a tone of the product that you think has changed as someone who's been going to shows for a long time and senses the difference?
Honestly, I really believe this. I believe a lot. I've heard you and some of your other people at the Torch say this, but a lot of the rebels that were in the crowd, a lot of the people that used to be more negative towards WWE, like, they have an alternative in AEW, and I love AEW as well. Like, I'm a wrestling fan overall, so I love both shows. But I think one of the big reasons that is really is that AEW's there, so, like, there's not as many rebels in the crowd, not as many people who want to take over the show and voice their displeasure with WWE. I feel like a lot of the fans in the crowd now are WWE fans who want to be at a WWE show, not wrestling fans who are forced to be at a WWE show because that's the only show in town, you know, something like that. And I just really feel like when AEW came, WWE was still felt like a cold product, even though, you know, all those rebels were gone. But now that it's hot, and it just really feels that way, like all the rebels are gone, to be honest. And I think it was built on the back of the Bloodline. Like, the Bloodline, it just carries everything. Like, if you look at all the top characters, you know, Seth Rollins constantly, not constantly, but every once in a while, taking shots at Roman. Cody comes in, his big feud with Roman. Sami Zayn and KO, they got hot off the back of the Bloodline and Roman. So I really think it was the Bloodline that made the product hot and built people off of storylines with them that continue their ascent, because Cody is hot coming off the Bloodline. Seth, I hate to say it, but he's over, or at least the song is over. And even KO and Sammy, like, are getting their way bigger pops than they were getting pre-Bloodline. So that's what I really think it is, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think you hit on a lot of the points. Obviously, WWE would like to know precisely why, and try to build on it. But it is a bit of a guessing game. But I think you had some good educated guesses there in terms of what's going on. Sergio, anything else jump out that you want to comment on about the show? Even, you know, your live experience, or just highs and lows of the content?
The live, it was fun. It was really fun. It's a fun show when the crowd is into it. When the crowd's not into it, it's hard for you to get into it. And so the live experience was really fun just because the crowd was hot. I mean, they were hotter for some things more than others. Like Cody by far. To me, Cody by far was the most over thing on this show. Like, he's just risen above, I think, even where Seth Rollins is. Seth Rollins, I'm convinced that Seth Rollins is over because of the song. People love to sing the song. And
right.
And I'm being honest with you, I don't like Seth Rollins right now. I've been a fan of his, you know, for a long time. I'm just not a fan of the character. I'm not a fan of the over the top parts of his character. And I thought, well, maybe when I'm there live, you know, and the crowd is singing the song and I'm feeling the vibes and I'm feeling the crowd's energy, maybe I'll be more into it. And I wasn't. Like, I was still annoyed by Seth and his annoying antics, and the crowd singing was more irritating to me. Like, I way more liked Cody, like the crowd saying whoa to Cody, than singing Seth's song. I'm like, I don't know. To go on a quick tangent, and then I'll let you guys go, because, like, years ago, I was one of those rebel fans that like to boo, you know, boo the good guys, cheer the bad guys kind of thing. And there was a show in Hartford, actually, a fan appreciation show. And the main event was supposed to be John Cena in the main event against then World Heavyweight Champion Kane. But John Cena did a show earlier in that day that he couldn't be in Connecticut. I forgot if it was like one of those Good Morning America shows or something like that. They announced in the beginning of the show, John Cena will not be in attendance today. We're sorry. If you need refunds, we'll give you refunds at the end of the show. Just go see, like, the ticket office or something like that. So it's like, okay. And I didn't care because I wasn't, like, a Cena guy. But, well, I didn't think I was a Cena guy. But Kane was going to host an open challenge later on in the night, which I thought would be Edge at the time because that's who he was feuding with. And Kane does an open challenge, and he says, whoever, you know, whoever's out there, whatever, come get a shot at the title. And my cousin was there with me, and sure enough, then John Cena's music plays. And up to this point in my life, I had booed John Cena because, you know, he's Superman and all that stuff like that. I couldn't hide it. I was so excited he was there after they announced that he wasn't going to be there. Me and my cousin looked at each other, our eyes wide open, and we just cheered him. I never booed him again after that. And it was just an amazing experience. So that made me think, like, hey, like, maybe being there will be different, and I'll embrace Seth the way I embraced Cena all those years ago. Because, like I said, I never booed Cena again after that, just because I was like, I can't hide how happy I was when I heard those trumpets play and he came out to accept Kane's challenge. I couldn't hide that anymore or pretend, like, or be a rebel. Like, no, boo Cena. I was super glad he was there. But with Seth, it's just not working with me. I don't like this character, and I don't know. I'm sure you've heard all this before, but I'm just down on the Seth character and wish they would put that title on a more serious competitor. And that's really all I got for you guys tonight.
Well,
thanks for listening.
Sergio, what would you tell Seth to augment that would bring you closer to endorsing him that wouldn't completely strip him of what seems to be working with a lot of the fans right now? Is there something you can recommend?
The laugh, maybe? Maybe it's the laugh. Maybe it's just the laugh. Yeah. Maybe he comes out, the over-the-topness, the dancing. Like, maybe I won't mind, like, if he came out and he orchestrated the crowd to sing his song. That's fine. But he just seems like a cartoon character. He seems way too over-the-top. It seems phony to me, Wade. Like, it seems like somebody who's, yeah. I know, it seems like somebody who's playing a character, you know? It's like, yeah. And he's trying too hard to play a character. It's like, I just feel like I read through the phoniness. I'm like, man, this isn't who this guy is.
Yeah.
This isn't even close to who this guy is. This guy is just doing this because it's what's working. You know, it caught fire, and I don't blame him. Hey, if it's working, it's working. I'm just one person in a crowd of however many people were there today that were chanting his song and chanting his name. But
right.
But to me, it's just,
but
this just comes off super phony.
So can't you've kind of pinpointed what you don't like about it. Do you think he can get all those other fans to keep cheering him, but eliminate the laugh, be a little more grounded, but you would be okay if there was still some of that bombast and over the top? Like I said earlier in the show, maybe just sort of a wink and a nod to the audience and find some way to do that, but also convey a little bit more in promos and even in the match, a serious side where it's almost, I would go back to the Flyboy Rocco Rock example in AEW where he'd do the sing song, happy-go-lucky, and then boom, something would happen and he'd get sinister mid-promo. And you would just look at his eyes and get chilled, like, oh God, this guy, I forget, he's so happy-go-lucky, but he's street tough too. Something where Seth could kind of flip a switch and go into another mode that you knew was kind of who he really was. And I don't really have it exactly figured out, and I don't know if he could pull it off, but that's why I ask, because I do think now that he's a world champion, centerpiece of Raw, along with Cody as men's baby faces, why not try to tweak it where you don't lose the people who are singing a song and loving him, but also win people over like you, who I don't think are insubstantial. I think that is a concern for Seth and WWE if they can – you know, I don't think you should ignore it. But you don't want to ruin what's going well for a minority of Seth critics. But, and that's why I ask.
No, I can say confidently that if there was – and I'm not even sure what the tweak is, to be honest with you. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have that kind of mind to it. But I know, like, if he wasn't so over the top or if there's just something about this character that just rubs me the wrong way, I would be all in on Seth because – there's been times in the past where I've been all in on Seth, like Authority Seth. I love Authority Seth. When he came back from his knee injury, I was so ready to embrace him as a baby face when he came back and had a triumphant return just to, you know, flounder. And that didn't work either. But I'm not sure what it is with Seth because I love his, because when he was too, like, I don't know if you obviously remember the feud that he had with Brock. Remember the feud he had with Brock, and he came out to the ring one time, and he was beaten down, and Brock had beaten him down, and he just comes out, and he's like, almost gasping for air, and he just barely with any heart says, I'm going to beat Brock Lesnar for the world title or whatever. And he was trying to convey something more serious, but that didn't work for me either. So I'm not sure where the middle ground is with Seth, but he's never quite found a character to match his in-ring work that just gets him to that point, because it's always just something with him. Like, I honestly don't know what it is, but I just know this isn't working for me, but I'm more than open-minded. I don't not like Seth Rollins, and that's it. You know, my mind is set, and I'm never going to like him again. I don't like this character Seth Rollins is playing, even though the performer, I think, is super talented, and I would totally embrace him if there was some kind of tweak, which, again, I can't pinpoint.
Very good. Sergio, thank you so much. Appreciate the call and the insight from attending tonight and the thoughts about Seth.
Thank you, guys. Have a great night, guys. Thank you for taking my call.
Yep, you too. Call again. 347-215-8558. Last chance to call if you're live streaming our show at WadeKellerPostShow.com. You can also find the link to our live stream at the top and bottom of my TV reports covering Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, and also usually on Twitter at PWTorch. But if all else fails, Wade Keller Post Show and navigate to the live stream about 5 minutes after the live wrestling shows end. All right, we'll go to Kyle in Baltimore next. Kyle, thanks for holding. What's at the top of your mind about Raw tonight?
I wasn't really thinking about talking about Seth right now, but this whole Seth discussion made me want to bring him up real fast because I got a whole different feeling about Seth for me. So for me, when I first saw Seth Rollins, it was in Shield in 2012 when I was 15. So I guess from being 15 then to now being 26, I have a different mindset about Seth. Now before, when he was a heel at that time, I was a teenager, I booed him because he was a heel, so that's why that's what happened. I didn't really know about storylines too much. I was still getting invested to like storylines and stuff like that, and what that meant fully. And so I was still playing the part of him being a heel. Ever since he became a babyface, I've been a fan of him ever since. I never wanted to boo him or whatever, even though if he was playing a heel. I was like, yeah, I get it, but I still like him anyway. So I think for me, being 26 and being kind of a younger fan than majority of the callers that call in most of the time, I just like him for who he is now, and I'm okay with the character that he plays, whether he's a babyface or a heel. I'm okay with it. What he's doing now, I'm all right with it, and I'm happy for what he's doing right now. So that's my two thoughts on Seth, and I'll get to what I really want to call him for. My main topic really is about Rhea Ripley and her, the fact that she is the SmackDown Women's Champion, whatever about the championship, whatever about different brands, but she is the Women's Champion, but she doesn't feel that important. It's still about Becky Lynch, who's still I view number one and Rhea Ripley number two in terms of people that they care about. I guess that's the number three underneath Trish at this point that they're focusing on. So I guess my question about Rhea Ripley is that what is she plan on doing heading into Money in the Bank and SummerSlam, since Becky Lynch is occupied and she's the logical real opponent for Rhea Ripley as a credible challenger for her heading into Money in the Bank or really wrestling SummerSlam. But since Becky's going to be busy with Trish and Lita and Zoe Stark, it seems like, What is Rhea Ripley going to be doing this summer for the championship as champion? She's been a very dull champion since she became – not dull, but she just doesn't have any direction since coming out of WrestleMania. She's kind of in a similar position that Bianca was in last year, and I didn't really expect that for it to be for Rhea Ripley, but here we are. So what do you think about Rhea Ripley's championship run and where you think it's going?
Darren, I'll throw it to you first on that. What do you think?
I'm thinking maybe they build up to a Charlotte Flair rematch. If I'm not mistaken, she is drafted by Raw, if I'm not mistaken.
She's on SmackDown.
Oh, is she? Well,
yeah.
Well, maybe she'll get traded. yeah, and plus they've got to do something with switching the belts, because the SmackDown belt is on Raw and the Raw belt on SmackDown, so they got to address that as well. But no one's really coming to mind. There's no one really standing out to who will get that Money in the Bank either. So I thought someone might emerge as a challenger tonight to help her and to help Cody Rhodes in that segment, but nobody came out. So she's just in a kind of holding pattern, which is a shame because she had momentum coming out of WrestleMania, but they need to get somebody up and running for her, though, and I'm not sure who that's going to be.
Does Indy Hartwell seem like somebody they could put against her on short notice? Is there – or does Raquel go singles? I mean, those seem to be the top candidates on the depth chart because – I mean, you can't do Dana Brooke or Emma, Nikki Cross. Unfortunately, Piper Niven, she's a heel, and they really haven't been consistent with her. They'd have to completely rebook her. Kyle, there's not a lot of depth there, but you'd think Becky ends up being a top opponent sooner than later.
Yeah, I just don't know what they did with Bianca Belair, where she just had Becky Lynch and even Sasha Banks, and that was it. And her entire title run has been just a lack of nothing. And that's what I fear that Rhea's going to be is going into that territory. So we'll see. I didn't really expect this title run from her. I thought she would be facing Becky after that. They teased that last year, and I thought that's what they'll be the direction at some point, and expect this Trish thing to continue on after WrestleMania. It's still surprising to me this is still going on between Trish and Becky. I thought this could even be over at some point. But I am happy, though, that Becky isn't Money in the Bank, and also Zoe started, but that was just obvious for that to happen. It's kind of hard to see who's going to, and we don't know who's going to be in Money in the Bank fully yet because there's only been three people in match so far. But as of right now, Becky's the obvious option to win as of right now because that's who it is. But in terms of star power, I don't know who else is going to be in the match. She's going to be like, she's put front and center in the graphic. So she's clearly the one who's going to be the most well-known name to be in the match without knowing how it was going to be the match for. But in terms of how do you think the match will be, and who do you think else is going to be in the match in the next couple of weeks for coming out of Friday if EO and Bayley will go in to be in the match itself too? So I guess EO's a favorite for me to win briefcase. If not Becky, it'll be EO for me. But what do you think about that? The narrative for the Money in the Bank qualifier so far.
Yeah, Darren, what do you think?
Raquel, they seem to want to protect her, and she could emerge as a potential challenger. I remember her and Rhea had that standoff that time, if I'm not mistaken, so there's a little something there. And probably want to put somebody new in, Zoe went in, but maybe that's where you fit in, like Andy Hartwell, somebody new that's not necessarily going to win. They did the Candice LeRae video, so maybe they have some plans for her, perhaps. But they'll play out the Bayley and EO thing. I think that one of them will go in to continue their storyline of jealousy or whatever and do their little split. So I think that would about fill it out, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess they could elevate Zoe. They could give Bayley. I'm not against Bayley winning and just being obnoxious about it. But if EO Sky wins it, then Bayley has to tolerate her having it when she wanted it. I don't think Shotzi or Meechan are going to win. I wouldn't rule out Zoe Stark. I would probably rule out Zelina because she's qualified, right? For it,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, and then Becky, you absolutely can give it to Becky, and I mean you can just that can be the path to her cashing it ahead of time against Ripley. So I think there's a variety of options there, Kyle. Any further thought on that?
Well, yeah, I just thought that for me in terms of what I was watching from Friday, I was really thinking because before it was just I was like, well, it's going to be Becky all the way without me knowing. I was thinking Becky or EO to be to win the briefcase without even knowing they were going to be qualified. And so now that I actually see it, so that's for me who I think will win. Zoe can win too because they can play off that as well. But so that's just how I just view it from that. But I guess we'll see. So I think the last thing I'll mention is Seth being the Seth and Priest match was good. I actually kind of wanted them to kind of save that for a bigger match for them to do and hold off on that, because I think there's stuff with Damian Priest that I want to see as champion at some point. But I also did like the tease between Balor and Rollins as well, got their history too. But what do you think in that direction that could be a thing between Balor and Priest, and just I think the Judgment Day as a whole? Because to me, it feels like that Damian Priest and Finn Balor just seem kind of secondary behind Dominic and Rhea, but mainly Dominic. Mm-hmm. They've been focused on Dominic a lot and not really caring too much about Priest and Balor, and I don't really like that too much, because I know that Dominic is getting all this heat, and he's getting good reactions in terms of getting booed, but he's not really wrestling. And we have Balor and Priest wrestling and not really doing anything. Same with Rhea, but it seems like it's all about putting on heat a lot on Dominic, and then the other three just seem like they're just there. So what do you think they're going to be doing with the Judgment Day? How can he change that if they want to change it? I think I should though.
Yeah, I mean, there's not great depth on the heel side, singles men's side for Raw, Darren. And if they are turning Priest babyface, I mean, it seemed like that's where they were heading. I mean, they've got Gunther, Drew in the wings, maybe turning heel if he comes back. JD McDonagh, is getting a push, is kind of an edgy guy, but he's not at that level. They're touting Kevin Owens having a temper, but I don't think fans want to see him turn yet again.
No.
Braun's out with some, I believe, neck surgery, if I recall right. So he's out for a while. Bronson Reed getting a push, but, blemish on his record, which was a bit of a setback, although, he got a little mic time today to try to get some of that back. But, you got Cody and Dominic, and you got Seth and Balor. That kind of exposes the depth, because I don't think people think of Balor and Dominic as number one and number two heels, but they are the two wrestlers who, as of right tonight, are feuding with the top two babyfaces.
Right, and that's and of course you got Brock, but he's just here and there, so he's not consistent.
He's hibernating, I hear.
Yes, but with Judgment Day,
by the way,
about
Brock too,
just,
as well. A little bit tired. Yeah. I just saw this too, as well, for Brock Lesnar. He's going to be in Baltimore for Raw in July. So that's what I saw. And he did advertising beyond on the episode of Raw and on July 3rd in Baltimore he's going to be there. So that'll be interesting. It's going to be after Money in the Bank. So probably be hyping up SummerSlam. Probably that's why they're advertising. Maybe that's my guess. So, but that'll be cool to see Lesnar again for a second time in person, but whatever. But that's what she says to that.
Interesting. Cool. Anything else, Kyle, we want to bring up?
The show was really good overall. Here, was said, was really fun, but I think the main thing too, talk about this entire Bloodline scene, is it's just I just think it's for them to just focus on the Bloodline themselves, and that's who Ray is going to be facing. If it's going to be Jey Uso and Roman Reigns at SummerSlam, like five, whatever. That's kind of why I am happy now that Seth is the World Heavyweight Champion, so that I can focus on that and him, whoever he's facing, and that will make me feel interested in terms of who Rollins is facing and whatever Reigns is doing with the Bloodline. But that's it. That's really an additional call now.
Cool. Thanks, Kyle. Appreciate it. Darren, anything you want to add to anything Kyle brought up?
No, I'm good.
All right. So Let's go back to Jay in Hartford, who followed up with an email, as I prompted him to do. He said, I was hoping Sergio would call in. I enjoyed his call and agree on the LWO shirts being so prevalent. I wanted to add a note on the women's tag team segment. I at first was down on Kayden and Katana facing Rousey and Baszler for their Raw match. I knew they'd lose, and I thought it would hurt them out of the gate in terms of getting over. My friend, however, who again doesn't watch today's product, pointed out that they'd benefit from the exposure. Smart man. They were impressive and pulled the crowd in, and I hope that we can now build them up so that when it comes time for them to get an actual title shot, people will believe they can win. So, yeah, that follows kind of my positive framing of what they did with them tonight. Back to Sergio. He's right about Seth. I'm not as down on him as he is, but while I think the crowd respects his in-ring work, I do believe it's the song that's over more than the talent himself. Also, my buddy asked, is he heel or face? Not a good sign. The crowd singing is not enough. He needs to, over time, modify how he presents himself. I don't have all the answers, but start with removing that laugh. So we're kind of all echoing the idea of or in sync on maybe downplaying the laugh so it doesn't seem, you know, so gimmicky and, frankly, grating. It just wears out its welcome pretty quickly for me.
Yes. If I can go back to the Kayden Carter and Katana.
Yeah, for sure. Thing.
They had such a good little segment where they showed their background and, you know, showed they, you know, kind of defined who they are and, you know, they like to party or whatever, but they're also very athletic. I thought that was a very good thing, but then it led to my pet peeve. And I understand it's not like the end of the world or anything like that of when a team debuts and loses immediately. It's just a pet peeve of mine. And I understand they did look good and were competitive against, you know, Ronda's like, you know, top of the, you know, food chain there and everything. But still, it just kind of rubs me the wrong way when people come right in and lose right off the bat. So I would have preferred not to see it.
I think that is a fair critique. Okay. Up next, JB from Detroit. Do you think Carter and Chance got too much offense and a close near fall in on their debut match on Raw against the newly crowned supposedly dominant killer tag team of Rousey and Baszler? So that's the other side of this. It's the conundrum when you put Carter and Chance against them right away. You have these two competing interests. Make Ronda and Shayna strong, but not bury a team that has some talent and maybe can be popular and a staple of the women's tag division. So talk about the content of the match, Darren. Did they, even though you don't like to see them lose, in losing, did they get in too much offense? Once that match, they decided to have that match, should they have structured it differently?
No, since they were going to lose, you needed to have them shine somewhat. So I think that was fine. And at the end of it, Ronda and Shayna wound up looking dominant. So I didn't think that they lost too much from having to sell for the new team whatsoever. They came out of it fine. So the way they worked the match, it was about as good as, if you're going to go that direction, that was about as good as you can do. So, yeah, I got no complaints about that.
Yeah. All right, number two from JB. I like the video packages tonight, introducing and reintroducing wrestlers such as Carter and Chance as a team and Johnny Gargano with his tremendous background and history in NXT. Yes, I like the Gargano segment. He got off to a bad start. He was annoying, off-putting. And that's not who he has been most of his career. And I thought the video tonight was the proper reintroduction, reframing of him. And it made me feel better about his chances to, you know, I think fans will give people a fresh look. They'll give a fresh start to people if they're presented a certain way. We see that with talent. Do you think they did a good job framing Gargano in a way that can at least aims him towards being over at a higher level than where he seemed, you know, a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, it was a good reset and reframing him for, he's been away for a few weeks where you can kind of forget some of the foolishness that they had done before. So it's a good reset. I think he referenced himself, though, as a mainstay on Raw, if I'm not mistaken. And I was like, I don't know about that. But that kind of was a little detour, I thought, but other than that, it was a good package. And then they focused on Candice last week, so maybe they had plans for both of them still, but they both got off on the wrong foot when they brought to the main roster, so this should help.
Yeah, they're not in assuming knowledge of the way and Dexter and Indy, I think it's a mistake, but it is the to use the word of the moment, a conundrum, in terms of not boring your NXT viewers, the, 500,000 plus people seeing them regularly, but also leave, you don't want people watching them to not know who these people are. So I think hitting the reset a little bit, taking a step back, and I think next should be Indy and Dexter, and find a way to tell a story that doesn't feel like a rerun, but catches people up, but also updates the dynamic between them on air and the whole group, if they're going to stick with them as a group. And I don't think they necessarily have to. Gargano's good. And he's young enough. They can still build him up in the way that, Sami Zayn, Daniel Bryan, AJ Styles, undersized wrestlers who got over as baby faces because of their work and their likability and almost an everyman quality. And I think he has that. And that's not necessarily something Vince McMahon looks at and goes, that's something I'm interested in. There's an audience out there for it. Vince back on headset tonight, by the way. No shock. They're in Connecticut when they're driving distance from, his home base. He's going to show up. He is, the top guy in under the WWE brand or the division. And so no surprise. I'm curious, and I'll ask around, if he – there's no way it'd be as chaotic as it was when he was riding the high of the sale announcement and showed up doing whatever Vince was doing, under whatever kind of rush high that he had from the sale and WrestleMania weekend being so successful. Hopefully he saw that there was some pushback. Maybe Ari Emanuel even said, "Hey Vince, love you, but try not to make so much news when you show up." And maybe Vince would respect somebody who is successful as Ari in that regard. So we'll get some word on that. But Vince on headset this week. But, like I said, from the beginning, everything I was told, even after the Monday after Mania or the Raptor Mania, everyone was waiting to see if he'd show up every week. People weren't thinking he would, and he hasn't. And I have reported here for a while that his influence has been overblown in some places. Others are now kind of catching up on that and hoping to spread the word that, as annoying as he can be sometimes, it's not like he's, running everything. Although what goes on away from even the writers between Paul Levesque and Vince McMahon during the week, we don't know exactly how many calls and texts Levesque is fielding, but, everyone's going to look for clues. Oh, Levesque wouldn't have done that. That's Vince. But then, you see a Gargano reset, and you're like, well, maybe Levesque, still has some influence. And a real key is the people from NXT that Vince isn't familiar with. Do they come in and get treated poorly or maximized based on what they've done in NXT? And if they're being maximized, that usually is going to be a sign that Levesque had power in that realm. All right. Number three from JB from Detroit. I'm confused by the actions of Bronson Reed tonight. Are they trying to turn him heel? I really liked his direction as a babyface, and he is relatively new to the roster for such a quick turn without any real reason to rush it, unless they plan to match him against Seth for a title shot sooner rather than later. I think Bronson Reed's a heel and been a heel, and when you're interacting with Ricochet and Shinsuke, you're not being framed and protected as a top guy, but he's also not being buried. And I think, losing doesn't ruin his chance to be elevated to take on Seth, later this year. Darren, what do you think of what they're doing with Bronson and how is he best utilized?
Yeah, I think it was a misstep last week having him lose. I just didn't see the point of that, but I guess he seems to be coming back on track. They haven't forgotten about him. He's not getting buried. He looked strong this week. So, they can still salvage it, but it was certainly a misstep. I just don't know why you would do that, but we'll see what happens. But he's kind of slotted in the mid card. I thought that they might have had higher aspirations for him, but as you just pointed out, he's with the Ricochets and Nakamura's of the world. So he still has a chance to break out of the pack, but got some work to do.
Yeah. And JB concludes, as always, love the show and go VIP. Thank you. All right. Azan from St. Louis says, hello, Wade and Darren. Do you think Ronda's run with the tag belts can change her reputation among hardcore fans? It's interesting because our flashback shows from 5 years ago are, talking about her early work in the ring, on the mic, comparing her to other you know, wrestlers who came in with some limited, you know, from outside of pro wrestling and coming in and trying to make a name for themselves and fit in. I like Ronda playing off of Baszler personally. I think it takes some pressure off her. I think Ronda's going to be better playing off of someone she's comfortable with on camera. I think they're already developing a bit of a chemistry. And Ronda alone, I just think you're sort of like white-knuckling through her promos. But when she's kind of waiting for her turn to react to Shayna, I think it's going to be better. In the ring, she's been good a lot of the time, not consistently very good, though. And I don't think she's grown. So I think the tag division is fine. And, you know, as long as they sit here and say, we're going to elevate the tag division and the importance of it, you can have center, you can have a tag team be perceived as the top act in a company or a top act. And so they've expanded the prestige of the women's division. And now the tag titles will mean more if that's something that Ronda actually wants. And big names have incentive to chase her. So I'm good with it. What do you think there?
Yeah, I think her having a lower profile role where she's not as under the microscope, I think it could do her a world of good. People are not just, you know, nitpicking everything. And she is awkward on those interviews, and it helps that she gets to share the mic with Shayna. And she seems more comfortable the last few weeks, you know, kind of has that attitude where she was, you know, knocking Katana and her partner. So that's a good start. The thing to make this a success, though, is they got to build up some other teams with credibility and get them some wins so that you can have some showdowns along the way, because it doesn't help if they're not, you know, beating anybody that's worth anything. So that's one of the big things they've got to work on, is getting that tag division up and running. But it's a good start so far, because I think they're gelling very well as a team, and I think it's a positive.
He also asks, it has been almost a year with Kevin Patrick as a lead play-by-play on Raw. How would you grade his work? Darren, what do you think? Darren? Cannot hear Darren. Maybe he can hear me. Darren, are you? Could be my mic, too. I'm gonna
Hello, can you hear me?
Oh, now we can, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I gave him an F, and that's why that probably my microphone cut out.
An F, really?
Yes, no. I mean, no, I would give him a C, because he doesn't take away from the product, but doesn't add anything to it whatsoever, and he just has that overexcited voice for everything. And Graves is carrying him, and obviously, as I pointed out, I'm no fan of him. I guess this is what they want. Bland announcing, it's the way it's been for years, and they seem happy with that. So
I was thinking during Night of Champions, what if something happens to Michael Cole? And Cole says, when I retire, you're never going to hear from me again. And I believe that. He's going to disappear. You know, and good. He's made good money. He can just travel the world or sit at home and read books or play video games or do what, play with kids or grandkids. I mean, good for him if that's what happens. But, like, where is WWE at that point? You know, what is their pipeline? I don't see – I mean, they'd be fine. They'd get by, but – Kevin Patrick doing 3-hour premium live event play-by-play calls.
Oh, no.
I mean, you know, I just don't think he's ready for that. I think he's fine. I mean, I don't have a problem with him, but he doesn't really jump out either. He's sort of affable. He's not making a bunch of mistakes. Like, he's not putting himself out there too much without the knowledge base, which was an issue with both of his predecessors, who were brought in from, you know, outside of pro wrestling. And I think they came in and wanted to make their mark. And I think Kevin Patrick is more, a little more humble. And obviously, you know, Corey Graves can do heavy lifting. It's an unconventional dynamic with those two, because Graves is the color commentator, not play by play, but he does so much more talking than Kevin Patrick. But I think Kevin's fine. Like I said, just, he's fine. His highs aren't high, his lows aren't low, and I think that they're okay with that because Graves is such a strong personality.
Right, and they've got the guy in NXT whose name escapes me, and he does a fairly good job. So I guess he's waiting in the wings, perhaps.
Let's jump to Don's final question. Does Paul Heyman come off as more dislikable in the Bloodline saga than he has before in his career? I don't think so. I mean, it's a different Paul Heyman. He's the wise man, and I mean, I've seen him from the very beginning. You know, the stuff he did in the territories, Memphis, Continental, AWA, got to, you know, see him at ringside. I shot ringside photos at NWA shows when he was managing there and did photo shoots with him behind the scenes for national magazines. And I mean, I go way back, and he's been an unlikable character every step of the way. The young brash guy or the, you know, edgy 30-something guy who's keeping track of trends running ECW through what he did in WWE, including color commentator and the different roles he's had on WWE TV. And then, you know, I mean, I think he's doing the best work of his career right now. But I think it's not like he didn't do good work before. I remember writing an article decades ago, early on in the careers of Paul Heyman and Jim Cornette, and I was just like, these are two people to watch for their on-air work and their wrestling minds, and also, can they adjust and exist in the wrestling business? Because they had, you know, well-earned reputations for being difficult to work with if you were an older authority figure. And Paul Heyman has found a way to navigate the waters, and Cornette has taken a different path. So Heyman's been, you know, I've said he's one of the most fascinating people in this wrestling industry with all the roles he's played, and he's a survivor, and he's the way that he has become a valuable friend and wise man in real life to Ronda Rousey, Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns. I mean, you know, he tried it with Curtis Axel a while back. He linked up with CM Punk for a while. I mean, he's had things that I, you know, I didn't think the Punk Heyman dynamic always felt a little redundant. I didn't think they needed each other. Curtis Axel was, you know, a tip of the hat to Kurt Hennig and Paul trying to create a new star. But where his, you know, where he's really keep is earning the trust behind the scenes of people like Lesnar and Ronda, even if stuff with Ronda hasn't been on air, and then doing just amazing work. And he is one of the, you know, smart, bright minds behind what has worked in the Bloodline. And it's been really fun to watch this chapter of his career. But to say he's more dislikable, I mean, that's subjective, because he's done an effective job at different ages and different stages and different settings being unlikable. So I wouldn't say he's definitively less likable now. Darren, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he was very mean to Joe Pettisino on Pro Wrestling This Week back in the
yeah.
day. So, yes. I mean, that kind of stuff. But now it's just a different kind of mean, like when he's telling the Usos not to show up or telling them to leave early and just being, you know, very subtly mean about it. So it's just a different presentation. But I mean, yeah, I would agree. He's doing the best work of his career. I mean, he's just a tremendous actor and is such an important part. And he's, you know, he doesn't have to carry segments every week or anything like that. But what he does, even if it's just facial expressions in the background, is just always so excellent.
It is. Yep. All right. Darren, we're at the end here of the show. Anything you want to add, anything in your notes or anything jump out that you've got something to say about that we haven't gotten to yet?
Nope, I think we covered everything. I will just plug that you can catch my Impact Wrestling live results on here on the Torch, and on the VIP side to do a podcast about Impact Wrestling with John Laszlo, and he also does the Hits and Misses column for Impact as well. If you want to catch me on social media, you can catch me on Instagram at DKLSTL, and I was in Las Vegas last week for a Double or Nothing weekend, so you can see photos of me with Jade Cargill and some of the other AEW stars if you want to check that out. And I did a video. I've got Jade Cargill's 1 of 3,000 Chase action figure signed, and you can see a video of that up on my YouTube channel on Darren's Wrestling World, so check that out.
Awesome. Thank you, Darren. Thank you, listeners, VIP members. If you haven't yet, check out the Weight Cutler Hotline with my Start to Finish Right on a Row. I'll cover everything we haven't covered here on the show. And we'll talk to you Wednesday night after Dynamite here on the post-show feed. But in between that, Jason Paul from ProWrestling.net joins me on the flagship. Look for that on Tuesday night on our Blue Logo feed.